Welcome to another podcast of Life Talk. Yes, with the one and only today, Cameron Devon Crew. I'm so excited because, god damn, I miss this man. And I was really patient. I was really patient because, I knew he has a beautiful child now, and he's being a stay-at-home dad for a little bit as well. And I love to catch up and hear how life has been. And how's the dad life, man? How is everything going?
Man, it's been absolutely beautiful. I will say this. One thing I did not know about raising a child is that it's an absolutely 24/7 job. By the way, I've never posted my child, but I'll give everyone a treat here. You can kind of see my son.
Wow.
In all of his adorableness. And yeah, raising a child is a 24/7 job. I respect motherhood and womanhood all that much more. And I now see so clearly why the roles of man and woman are important, because all of the qualities that my wife has that are essential for raising my child at this delicate age of infancy, I don't possess those qualities as a man. But what I do possess is going out of the house and acquiring resources and abundance for us so they have the safety, security, and everything they need to thrive. So I just want to stress the importance of the man's role and the woman's role that we have a void of today.
That is beautiful. How would you describe those roles, my friend? Obviously, this is a controversial topic. Can we just touch base real quick on the people that are tuning in and people that are on TalkTalk as well? And yes, I do consciously name it TalkTalk, by the way. It's not a mistake. I just like that so much better. So can we define those roles, those controversial roles, which shouldn't be controversial in the first place?
Absolutely, man. I want to take it to a metaphysical, more esoteric level first. Feminine energy, which is the primary natural energy of the woman, is all of the range of energy and emotions that make up life. So all of the energy that we see around us in the world, all of the energy and the full range of expression that we possess as individuals, that's your feminine energy. And it's a very powerful and beautiful thing. Without feminine energy, life would be bland, boring, and likely not worth living to a certain degree. You wouldn't really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And masculine energy on a metaphysical level is basically stillness. So if we looked at a line graph, feminine energy could go up and down and oscillate. You have the full range of expression. Masculine energy is that straight line, the ability to have a vision, the ability to move towards it without considering how you might feel and what changes might take place in and around you, right? So the woman's role in the household is bringing to the house itself, to her man, and to the children, all of the energy and the sensitivity that's needed to make sure that you're nurtured and well taken care of. Masculine energy is the ability to detach, basically set goals, and move towards those goals relentlessly, regardless of what changes may take place that are good or bad. It's staying on the course. And the feminine energy is the motivation. I heard one person describe it like this. The woman is the motivator. The man is the activator. So the man, even with his genetic seed, whenever you have intercourse and you plant your seed inside the woman, you activate the start of life. But the woman nurtures that, grows it inside of her, brings it to birth into the real world, and then nurtures it and motivates it into adulthood, basically. So that's kind of how I look at the difference between the woman's role and the man's role.
That is so profound. So, say that said, what can we say about pursuing pleasure, as in casual sex, which is a very, very hot topic, especially where I'm mm-hmm. at, especially, I think, also where you at in Vegas.
Oh, absolutely.
So what is your approach on that and your take?
So casual sex has become the norm really all around the world, with the exception of maybe just a few places that are still traditional. But casual sex has become the norm of how we meet people, first engage with them and get to know who they are, quote unquote. Yeah. And then we try to develop relationships after the fact. previously, when we had more nuclear families, stronger households, and societies that were less hedonistic and chaotic, people would have sex after they got to know each other to make sure that this is really a partner who I want to be with long term. And then they would take the, I'll call it the a risk, because when you engage in sex, there's a risk involved. There's a risk of creating a new life. And that can be a beautiful thing, or it could be a tragic thing for people who engage in that activity without any real intention or forethought. So my thoughts on casual sex are, and you know, people listening, if you watch my content, I obviously do teach a lot about how men can go out and meet women and have good interactions. But if you want to be a man or a woman of intention and you want to be successful in your life, you have to understand that relationships are the most important thing in your life. In business, we say that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. But if it's true in business, it's even more true in your intimate lives, because when you engage with someone intimately and bring them into your life and you intertwine, you have unlimited liability based on what's going to come from y'all's interaction long term, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Whereas with a business, you could dissolve the business and separate from it. You can't, well, people approach it this way, but you can't just have a kid with a partner and then pretend that that didn't exist and like file it away. It doesn't work like that, right? So the choices that you make on an intimate level, you need to always understand that they are going to affect you potentially for the rest of your entire life, even if you look at the possibilities of certain STDs that you could get from casual sex, right? So what I would say to people is, I do think it's important to date, both men and women, to date, to get to know the opposite sex. If you're a woman, you need to know, you need to understand what kind of man you want. You need to know what kind of men are out there so that you can make the right choice and avoid men who are bad. And the same for men. You need to know who you are as a man, what you offer, and what you can bring to a relationship. You need to know what women can bring to you, your household, your children. And without experience, you can't be a prime chooser. But again, it all comes back to intention. Are you out here being hedonistic, just having fun? Or are you dating for the purposes of being able to find the right fit life partner for you?
So you're also saying, from what you're saying, like, is that the hedonistic pursuit is not per se good or bad. However, you need to have a clear intention of what it is that you want. Do you want to be part of a top 1% life? Look strongly at the relationships you have and how you're spending your time sexually and intellectually. And also, what is casual sex doing for you?
Exactly.
I do believe that if you use anti-conception and it gives you calm, it gives you peace, it gives you a certain level of fulfillment, if you will, then that there's nothing wrong with that. However, I'm a strong proponent, just like yourself, for sex with intention. And I don't believe necessarily that casual sex has that right intention.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think me and you both have had a history where we had our fun, right? As many people have. And look, I am not an advocate or someone who is so conservative where I would say having sex is a bad thing. I mean, having sex is a beautiful thing. It brings a lot of pleasure. It actually does, if done the right way, allow you to get to know someone on a level that's more deep than any other possible interaction that you could have. That's not how most people are doing it, though, when they're having casual sex. They're drinking, they're using other drugs possibly, they're going out and they're hooking up with somebody who's hot. And it's nothing deeper than that. And sure, you have some fun and pleasure from it. But, you know, I can speak from personal experience. In my days doing that a lot, you do all these things. You spend this time, energy, you spend your resources going out, meeting people, doing stuff just to hook up. But then the next morning when you wake up and go about your day, and you think about it, what do you have from that? Like, what did you
gain? Yeah, a good time.
Exactly. You have memories, basically. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
Right? But it's ultimately draining your assets.
True.
Time, energy, finances, et cetera. So you want to engage in relationships that are going to be there's you need an ROI, because we don't have unlimited resources, especially time and energy. You can always make more money, but your time and energy is absolutely crucial. So you have to really think about how you're spending your time with the people you're around and what it's going to lead to down the road. And a lot of times, this is my last point, when people engage in casual sex, I like to be kind of calculative, right, when I make decisions. So when you engage in casual sex, the upside is entertainment, but the downside is so much tremendously more that it doesn't make any actual logical sense to engage in that activity. If you look at it from that standpoint, again, not saying you shouldn't do it, but what you can gain from it versus what you can lose is that the seesaw is tremendously tipping this way.
Wow, this is so deep, my friend. I'm really processing this. Is there any questions right now? Let's get it going. I do want to say that and I'm sure you can relate, when we were younger as men, we felt like we were the men amongst our peers, if you will, if we had sex with beautiful women and multiple at the same time, and we could talk about it, but then my personal experience is it quite left me with an empty feeling after all, because you could sleep with the most beautiful models in the world, but, and you had a good time. You felt like you were the man, the top G, right? But was that it? What was it going to do for me? Then I lost time. I lost my seat. I didn't make any babies. So, okay, then. What other sources are there to feel more complete? What other sources are out there to feel a level of stress relief, if you will, right? And there's many. However, society, the left, the evil West, wants us to believe that sex is the only way, that we need to have multiple partners, that we should be out there fornicating with others. What about other forms of excitement and joy and pursuit and relieving stress? But everything is so sexual, or everything is so sexually oriented. So that's all we think of, right? Everything, all the time. So that's another conversation on a meta level that we could have about, like, why is it that we have this need? Is it truly to spread our seed, or... It's not, clearly, because we're using condoms, right? So, and what is it? Oh, hedonistic pursuit. Okay, but what is that doing for you? Ah, yeah. Okay, and there's, again, like you said, if that's something that you do it safe. You're having a good time and you're okay with where you are in life and content. You have no further ambitions. That's great. But you and I are both around high performers. People that want to be part of a 1% in their age category, well, then you need to take a look at these things, right? So that's the conversation we're having right now.
Yeah, you're hitting on a massive point. Mm-hmm. In our culture, you know, it's all about the dollar. We live in a capitalist society. And if you condition people into a mentality where they pursue pleasure, so that's what hedonism is, the pursuit of good feelings. Mm-hmm. It's really quite simple. Why do we chase all these things? We know from science and the study of the brain that any activity that creates dopamine and other chemicals in the brain becomes an addictive forming habit. So if you can get people to want to pursue sex, then you have to look at all the other things involved with that. So in our culture, again, it's all very superficial. So we're taught as men, if you want to acquire beautiful women and compete and get the best looking women, then you have to make as much money as possible. You have to wear the best suits. You need to go buy a McLaren. You need to have a fly pad and a high rise, right? So now you're spending money as a consumer in order to get these tangibles to attract the woman. It's kind of like the peacock theory. And this stimulates the economy for the elites who are making money and benefiting from all of these expenditures. There's other things that we could be putting money into that would be more long-lasting and better for us as individuals and people in general. But as long as you can keep people on this hamster wheel where they're looking for that next dopamine spike, then you can sell them alcohol. If you look at the nightclub, for example, it's a really great micro example of the macroeconomics of the situation. So the entire club exists where it's basically indirectly selling you sex. You have this beautiful nightclub where you bring in an awesome DJ that's super trendy and popular right now. You put tables inside the venue that are a couple of square feet by square feet. You sell it for $2,500 US. And you put a few attractive girls, you let them in free and put them at the table. This happens in Vegas all the time. You put them there, and then the VIP host will get a guy who wants a table, and he'll say, hey, we have this table over here with five girls at it. You can get four bottles because they're going to need that to have fun. So spend that, keep running up your bill. And that's kind of how it goes. At the end of the night, you might get laid. So all of this that you did, working, making money, saving, using your credit, et cetera, was to spend money on all those things in hopes of hooking up.
Wow. And then we do it. And then what?
Exactly. What we need is to teach true masculinity, which is basically knowing what your purpose is, having a purpose, and then living or dying by it on a long-term scale. If you have goals that you're seriously pursuing, sure, you can have your fun every now and then, but it can't be the main course of what you do on a regular basis, right? So if we taught that on a more spiritual level, a lot of these things would fall by the wayside naturally.
Also, like, you know, I was very self-reflective for a long time, and I asked myself where I could have been. You know, I'm fairly successful for my age compared to peers, but then I'm like, hey, what if I would have spent my time more wisely in my early 20s? Yeah. You know, I sometimes ask myself, because I love to be vulnerable, right? And I love to self-assess. And that's okay. Like, I don't think anything is there. I think everything is a lesson, and we all make choices, and they're never bad. I think every choice is a good choice. It's just going to teach you something different. So what I came to understand is that, and probably for a lot of other young men as well, is that we are not really taught, like you said yourself, what true masculinity is. We feel that we need to pursue girls. We feel constantly this emotional need to have sex with women. And it's so much time and energy and resources, like you just mentioned. And then the meta question here is like, okay, wow, how do we teach these young men to focus on themselves, to focus on building a strong character and masculinity and what life is about? And, you know, you can create an empire for yourself. Because if you can't do that having 5, 6, 7, 8 women around you. You know, you might be the man. You might feel like the man. But really, you're not. Because you're not building anything sustainable. You're just losing your time, energy, and seed. In a condom. I hope at least you're doing it safe. Right? You know, like, but that's my thing. So, you have a question, Willow, please ask, because I sometimes look at the comments because it's also a podcast, so I want to keep the flow, if that makes sense. Wow, man.
You know, you're absolutely right. I want to add to that. Yeah. And like my point of view on that is, as a man, your only legacy is what you leave behind, right? In the way of your kids and what you've built that's going to be long lasting in the world. And most men aren't pursuing anything like that whatsoever. But also in our society, we don't teach women what true femininity is, the same as men. So if you look at it from the flip side, you know, we have an epidemic where women are doing whatever they can to get plastic surgery, to get the perfect nose, the perfect cheeks, breast implants, ass jello shots, and all so they can post it on Instagram to get a baller, so they can go on vacations, eat in nice restaurants, and get handbags, right? So that's a frivolous pursuit that really goes nowhere. And look, Jesse and I both have nice, elegant tastes. So we enjoy nice things. We live in nice places. We go nice places. We're going to drive the McLaren. But that's not the foremost thing that we're pursuing. That's a byproduct of pursuing our purpose. And I agree with you, man. Like in my early 20s, I spent so much time learning game. And I spent a lot of time learning business and other things too. But I spent so much time learning about dating dynamics, which is a valuable thing now. But I fully agree with you. How far would I be if I was just purely pursuing purpose and not spending so much time hooking up?
And then I have the second question here, because this is so profound. Do you think it's our masculine imperative to have sex with other women? I myself, up until this day, have this need, whether or not I'm in a relationship. I need one partner to have sex with, at least one. If that makes sense. I'm just being completely vulnerable here. We're talking to the number one trending relationship coach in the world, okay? And I'm not exaggerating. He's a great, you guys have heard him before. What is your point of view there? Maybe you can be also vulnerable and just put it out on the table. What is your opinion on that? Or is that just weakness?
100%.
Or is it a masculine imperative?
If we look at the formal study of evolutionary biology, so you could read The Evolution of Desire by Dr. David Buss, for example. And he explains there from our hunter-gatherer ancestors. You have to really realize before modern society, our life expectancy really hasn't increased that much. If a person survived infancy and toddlerhood, they probably lived to around 50 to 70, actually. That's a big misconception people have. However, infant mortality was extremely high when we were in hunter-gatherer societies. So what women did, like how women evolved and how men evolved, was to, solve the issue of infant mortality. So women sought out the best fit, most resourceful, most capable masculine providers possible, because the more resources he had, the more social network and power he had, the more likely it was that the infant wouldn't get killed by some other alpha male who wanted to come in and like only have his genes in the tribe, et cetera. The more resources he had, the more likely it was that the infant wouldn't die from hunger, for example, right? And men evolved to basically lay their seed with as many women as possible. Because if you have 8 kids and 5 die, well, you still have 3. And then your genetics survive, right? But if you only have one child, the odds of the kid actually surviving are not in your favor, right? So we evolved under those kind of primitive conditions. And our genetics haven't caught up to where we are in modern society in many ways, not just in sex. But it's an undeniable truth that men have an extremely strong impulse to pursue sex for the purposes of reproducing, right? And like you said, with one woman at the minimum, but if we're being honest, with as many as possible, right? And it can be similar for women. So for example, when we look at infidelity rates are actually around 50 to 55% on the women's side, around 55 to 62% on the male side. So it's actually surprisingly close. Most people think it's usually men who commit infidelity. That's not true. We commit infidelity for different reasons. Again, on a primal, unconscious level, the man is cheating, not for love for another woman, but because in his ancestral days, that would have given him another opportunity to have another kid so his genes could reproduce and his legacy could continue, right? But the woman would cheat if there was a man who, on a physical level, on a resource level, or on a power level, had more advantage than her current partner. So women will cheat on an unconscious level if they're around a man who is quote unquote superior to her primary partner.
Wow. So you don't believe that from just a physical point of view, and psychological as well, we know that it creates more oxytocin. We know that it creates less cortisol. It drops our cortisol There's many other factors that are beneficial for us. Just from that perspective alone, you wouldn't say that it's good to have intimacy with a woman that might not be the one that you're in the relationship with. If you will, maybe, what is it called? Friends with benefits?
Yeah.
You get the benefits.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. that seems just to have a little bit more purpose than a one night stand to me. At least you both know what you're into and what you're doing.
Yeah, a bit more structure.
Yeah.
You're right, man. I mean, we wouldn't be addicted to sex
if
there weren't tremendous advantages and benefits to doing it, right? Like, you get, you know, what you get in your mind from having sex and having an orgasm, especially for women, because they have multiple, right? Mm-hmm. What you get in your mind is like as powerful, so they say, as like using ecstasy or Molly. So it's extremely gratifying on an emotional chemical level in the brain. And that's why you're constantly pursuing it, because when you have sex, and especially on a one-night stand or kind of a more casual situation, because it's mm-hmm. novel. So not only do you get the gratification of the release, but also there's the excitement and the thrill that goes into like having a new partner, right? So you're right, man. I think, and I like David Data. Mm-hmm. He talks a lot about Eastern philosophy, and he calls it yogic practices of intimacy and sex between men and women. You can have a partner where you're both very intentional about the exchange of masculine, feminine energy that you're getting every single time you're before each other. And not to like go too deep down this little rabbit hole, but you kind of touched on this earlier. So when we look at sex, if we don't want to shy away from it, a big part of the reason, beyond just the physical, that we are so drawn to it, mm-hmm. as a man who's masculine, you have a void of feminine energy in your body. So you have a void of emotional range. You're more detached. When you're around a woman who's feminine, her emotional energy fills you up, and it makes you feel an aliveness that you don't normally feel when you're walking around in your day-to-day life. Same is true for women. If you're very feminine and you go with the flow of your emotions, which there's nothing wrong with that, when you're around a very solid, stoic man, what feels good is the grounding energy. It makes her feel more safe, secure, more stable when she's physically in front of the man, right? So what we also have to realize is, let's say that you want to be a man and you want to follow like your purpose and your path. When you have a lot of masculine energy, your drive for woman engagement is actually going to be even stronger than a man who plays video games and stays home and has mediocre goals. So if you don't want to spend too much time, energy, and resources pursuing women, or cheating on your current woman, you can seek sources of feminine energy outside of just the embodiment of a woman. So you can go out in nature. That's feminine energy. When you're in Hawaii and you go on a hike and you look at the waterfalls, and then you go to the beach and swim and surf, and then go eat some good food, that's all feminine energy. If you go to the spa and get a massage, et cetera, that's feminine energy. And for women, if you have a void of masculine energy in your life, or you're craving more, then you could go take a yoga class, or go meditate, or go read a book. And this is also you communing with the opposite energy to what you possess in your body, right? So those are practices that you can use to be faithful, or just to avoid, or I won't say avoid, but to kind of quell that craving you have for the opposite energy.
We have a lot of good questions coming in from Amber. One of them is, biology tells us men were not made to be monogamous.
Yeah. Here's my explanation of that, and I've read a lot about this. I don't think our genes make us either monogamous, polygynous, or non-committal. I think our genes are moving us to take the best action, of course, that's going to ensure the survival of our offspring, as well as ensure our own livelihood as individuals. So that could mean being monogamous as a woman if the man who you have the option to be with mm-hmm. is highly successful, right? So women who are with men who are successful do tend to be more monogamous. Now, if you're with a man who is very unresourceful, then the best odds of you ensuring the survival of your kids and your own well-being might be to commit infidelity. If you happen to be with this lower man, but then a different man comes before you who's interested in you, right? On the flip side, if you're with a solid man and then like there's some random dude who's interested in you and hooking up with him, even though he's physically good looking, if hooking up with him meant you would lose what you have with the very resourceful man, you're going to be drawn away from that, if that makes any sense, right? So yeah, man, it's very situational. Morality is something we created. You know, it does come from God, right, and the universe as well, but morality is largely a man-made concept. So we have to keep these things in mind. Our urges don't always coincide with ethics and morality.
Yeah, no, that I think when we talk about loyalty and you talk about situational circumstances that could lead to cheating, I think for a lot of people that's quite concerning. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are still in this idea that, oh wait, we're together forever.
Yep.
You're mine forever. Right, guys? So I'm just saying, like, when you talk about it like this, you're basically saying that once you have your partner, you're still in competition with others. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we have to be intensely realistic about the world we live in, right? Even in the modern society.
And I'm sorry guys, harsh. But this is, I know that some people are like, oh my God, but this is very harsh truth. So please elaborate. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you have to be very realistic about the world that we actually live in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in pre-modern society, the world was brutal. Even today, though, there are millions of homeless people, loads of people weighed down by stress of not having enough finances, debt, poor credit, a lack of a social group, and lack of power in the world to go and do as you please for your well-being. So when you look at that, that's always weighing on the psyche of the human man and woman. So the question is like right in your face as a man, if you're average. And I think Kevin Samuels' platform really exposed that women are not attracted to average men. And the average man can make anywhere from $40,000 to really like $75,000 US, which sounds like a decent income. Because that's actually above what most people make.
It is.
Women
yeah.
largely don't find those men attractive, though. If there's a man who's a multimillionaire, and he's also good looking, and he has a fly lifestyle, and he's charming and witty, do you really think, average man, that if your woman had the opportunity to potentially have a relationship with him, that she wouldn't do it? You just have to be intensely realistic. She can love you, but that doesn't remove the reality of all those other things, you know, weighing on her psyche that might lead her towards that. Now, she might not do it. If she's, you know, the less superficial a person is, the less likely they are to kind of jump on those opportunities. For men, too, you could have a woman who's a really great woman. She's going to be a great wife. She's feminine, submissive, cooperative, all these things that we look for as men. She's going to be a great nurturer for your children, but she's average looking. And then there could be a really hot girl, right? And on a biological level, our genetics have told us the more attractive a woman is, the more likely she's going to produce healthy offspring. That's what the science says. Mm-hmm. So the man who's dating the average looking woman, if he has the opportunity to hook up with the bombshell, he's going to be strongly driven to do that, right? Like, even though he loves his woman, he might not do it, right? But that's going to come down to, does his mentality and his own sense of morality outweigh what his unconscious urges are driving him to do?
Wow. Guys, do you hear the truth? Do you wake up from the bubble that you're in already? If you have not, after listening to all these podcasts that we've been doing? So what about What about this? So you're basically saying the commitment as we know it, the integrity of, hey, I'll be there forever, your mind forever, is basically a facade. It's a bubble. It's like fairy tale BS.
Yeah, it's everybody yearns for love.
Yeah.
And emotional attachment, right? We evolve that way. It's on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but it's the very top of the hierarchy. The security, the ability to survive, the ability to have food, shelter, water come far before and are much more powerful needs than love. Now, love is a real thing, but also, and this is kind of my perspective, and this, you know, some people might not like this, but to me, what most people describe as love is basically just another type of addiction. So when you're in a relationship with someone who values you, who appreciates you, who validates you, that creates dopamine and other chemicals in your mind, right? So when you're exposed to that from that person over and over across a period of time, what happens is you want to keep feeling those emotions. When you hang around other people who may not validate you as much, it'll move you back towards your partner because that's where those good emotions are coming from in your brain. Now, I'm not going to say love isn't real, although I do think that we live in a culture where they kind of sell us a Disney fantasy and a fairy tale. And I think that society does not want us to look at the brutal, harsh reality of how the world really works and how human nature really is. But I think if you have a realistic mindset and you understand what men are drawn to and what women are drawn to, just truthfully, if you understand that, and you understand what people might do, then you can be better informed to make decisions about partners that you make. Like, a lot of this is becoming more socially intelligent in this realm, right? Like, we wouldn't give people sympathy that they got into a bad loan that had a terrible interest rate because they didn't understand finances. So we can't extend sympathy for ignorance in relationships. You need to remove the veil of ignorance, come to terms with reality, see the world clearly and truly, and then make the best decision. That's all of life.
Oh my God. Yeah. I have a question here from Jennifer. I also feel like most people mistake being in love for "I love what you do for me." And this is very true. I just want to get to that real quick. I think when we talk about altruism as an example, which I think is a big important component for a successful and long-lasting relationship that you consciously choose to have, it's always going to be a relationship just based on love, loving feelings and care. But just like a business relationship, it is about, I love what you do for me. Absolutely. And it's a reciprocation of that. And that's why a lot of times there needs to be an expectation management in the beginning. So you determine what are your needs and what are the other's needs. Kind of like understand that from each other and communicate properly about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Man, yes, great point from Jennifer and what you said. I have a life-changing piece of advice for everyone. I would encourage you to consider what I'm going to say because you've probably never heard this. Instead of asking yourself, how do I find a partner who loves me? I think a far better question and frame of mind to come from is, how do I find a partner who cares about me? And just like you were saying, from the frame of altruism, to love someone can mean that you love them, appreciate them for who they are as a separate entity. But usually it means that you're in love and infatuated with the feelings that you get and the things that they do for you, be they external or internal, right? What's the problem with that is that, let's say that you're a man and you're providing a great life for your woman and you're charming, you're in great shape, you'll have great sex, everything 10 out of 10. She's going to feel good and she's going to be in love with you because she's getting so much positive emotion from you. However, that doesn't mean that she cares about your well-being separate and different from herself. So that same man, God forbid, comes into a health crisis and can't work and loses his wealth, for example, and loses his power and his esteem in the world, right? would the woman care about him in the sense that she would still want to make sure that he's okay because she just cares about him, right? Most people don't have a relationship with someone who just cares about you, right? Like if you look at the way that parents have a relationship with their child, the child is coming from a completely selfish frame because the child's love and affection comes from the fact that he's getting so much sustenance from the parents. The parents truly just care about and love the child, though. They're getting things in return, right? Obviously, you love the kid, but you know, you're not actually getting anything, right? Like you're the one giving and providing the situation. And you know, this is a difficult frame for men and women to be in because as men, we're taught to provide, which you should. I believe in that. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, men find themselves in relationships with women where they are doing all the giving, the woman is doing all the receiving, and there's not a dynamic in place which truly requires the woman to give to the man and care for the man, if that makes any sense.
Amber just replies real quick. I don't agree, she says. Women are inherently givers and carers. We love even when we don't want to. Lol. Okay. I mean, that I understand what you're saying, Amber. Like, and then this is, I think, what is beautiful about the feminine energy and imperative to care and to nurture, right? That's what you're referring to.
Yeah, let me put it into a more clear example, because I agree with what she's saying, but I think we're saying two different things. Again, you know, the reason I value my woman mm-hmm. is because she has a nurturing energy that I could never provide to my child, right? Yeah. Or even into the home or for me. I just don't have that in me. So what I mean is this. If you look at two adult men and women, right? A man is mentally prepared and already has the mindset that he's going to take care of or would take care of his woman, assuming he could, for the rest of her life without receiving anything tangible back. Obviously, he's getting a lot of nurturing from her, feminine energy from her, but that's not what I'm referring to. The average adult woman is certainly not looking to take care of a man for the rest of his life. That's what I mean when I say care for.
Makes sense.
To care for someone means that, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we have Chris saying, oh, I disagree. A great deal of wives or women work outside the home, take care of the kids and the home. And no, we don't disagree with that. Of course, there are women that are working and there are, you know, taking care of the kids at the same time. And I'm glad that works for you. Of course. In fact, in a lot of homes, let's be honest, it's necessary. You know, life is expensive. So not everybody has the luxury to have a woman nurturing and taking care of the kids alone. It's also a different conversation. So if you do find a balance and it does work for you, that's amazing. However, I think me and I can speak for you too as well. We truly believe in the nurturing aspect and capability of a woman. And sometimes there's a man that's very feminine and has that nurturing ability too. I don't disagree with that. However, it's mostly women that have that instinctively, you know, and that's something that I just kind of like want to touch on and make sure that we are on the same page here. Did I leave anything out?
No, I agree. Oh, I agree. Okay. It's a difficult point to make, right? Because the two points that we're talking about are like different, but they sound similar. Mm-hmm. Like an example, if a woman was born wealthy, she's probably still not going to choose a man that she can take care of for the rest of his life without him contributing. However, a man would do that.
I love that, my friend. In closing, is there anything else that you want to leave the podcast with? It is right now 11 p.m.
No, man. Thanks for having me on. Well, I will say this. I think one of the best things that anyone can do to improve the quality of your relationships and find the most ideal partner for yourself is to know who you are as a man or a woman, know what your value is extremely clearly. A journal would be helpful. And then seek the same thing. So do a journal about what you're looking for in your ideal partner. The more clear you are on that, the better you can screen and qualify people coming into your life.
I love it so much. What a deep podcast. I can't wait to listen to it back, to be honest, myself. Wow, very deep. Thank you so much again, Devon, for coming on and sharing all your wisdom as well. And I always really enjoy our conversations and very open and honest. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
I see you hopefully next week, and we're going to touch on a different subject. So speak to you then.
See you all then.
Thank you, my friend.